Welcome back in. Final hour. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, David James here with you on this Tuesday morning. And we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Say hello to our friend Gentry Estes from the Tennessean. Gentry, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Doing well. Good to be with you guys as always.
Good to have you with us. Appreciate you taking time to do that this morning. Gentry, we got a lot to get into with you. We'll start with Tennessee and Vanderbilt. So on the Tennessee front, SEC regular season title, now an SEC tournament title as well. And you look at their regional, obviously on track to host all the way through the Supers and trying to get to Omaha again. What did you make of Tennessee and kind of the way they battled back in the SEC tournament and were able to come away with another SEC tournament victory?
Yeah, you know, they go down there and they didn't seem to have a lot to play for down there. They were in one of those positions where you couldn't really improve your status in the NCAA tournament because you might have been the number one overall seed anyway. So you go into that and you're looking at Tennessee as a team that's it's a little bit thin pitching wise in terms of depth, just because they really only have one true starting pitcher on that staff. So they need a lot of guys out of the bullpen to eat up innings. And so that, to me, when you see that, that's not a recipe for somebody who wants to go to Hoover and play all these games in a short time. But Tennessee did it. They did it, and they made it work. They were able to survive with several guys stepping up out of that pitching staff that I think they're going to need at some point here in the postseason. And the fact that they were able to kind of learn something about themselves that they can rely on some of these guys, I think was a big deal for Tennessee, actually. So they got something out of this tournament that I really do think is going to help them. And going into it, I'm not sure – you really envision that being the case. They were kind of already set. There really wasn't a lot they could gain in terms of the results. But they were put in some tough situations in these games in terms of they were close games. They didn't beat people 15-1. You know, the hitters didn't just take over. They were able to win these games through a lot of their pitching. And I think going into the NCAA tournament, to me, that's still the biggest question about Tennessee, is how they're going to navigate the fact that they're going to need a lot out of their bullpen in terms of just the innings and who steps up. And to me, this was a big deal.
No, I agree. Like you said, I mean, they have Drew Beam, and they hope he can give them 6 or 7 in a start and keep the team down. Other than that, it's just a bunch of good, talented arms by committee. And I think it's a great thing for them to actually – because – like sometimes if you're a team that already is going to be a host team, you know, these tournaments, it's like, no, I don't want to like strain my starter and have 6 innings on. But this is just everybody had some appearances, chipped in. All of them probably have some confidence going in, so I think it ends up being a really good thing for them. Also, Gentry, you wrote about this, they're set up here potentially to look at Chase Burns, if they get to Supers, if that works out, a Wake Forest gets there. You've got Vanderbilt and Clemson. Do you buy that the NCAA committee does not go out looking for drama when they're setting these things up?
I think they absolutely do. I've thought all season that Tennessee and Wake Forest were going to be paired together in this tournament. I've been saying it all season. I thought Tennessee got a pretty tough draw for the number one overall seed. To me, getting Wake Forest in the Super, Chase Burns or not, that's a really good team. And I didn't like Tennessee's draw very much. I think a Super Regional against either East Carolina or Wake Forest could be really tricky. And you got Southern Miss coming in for the opening regional. Southern Miss, pretty good team. I think Tennessee saw that last year. There's some history there with how that Super Regional went. So, yeah, they always like their storylines in this, right? You know, Tim Corbin's going back to Clemson again. And, you got Texas and Texas A&M together and Georgia Tech together. Yeah, so they do that. And I think for Tennessee, if Chase Burns and Wake Forest is coming back to Knoxville, if it works out that way where they're coming back for a Super Regional, that's going to be the marquee Super Regional of the tournament. Everyone's going to want to watch that.
Yep, no doubt about that. Gentry, do you think Vanderbilt – has found something here over the last week, kind of heading into the tournament here?
Yeah, that's a good question. And they've played better, certainly, in the last week. Kind of going back to what Joe said, about Tennessee, that first game in the SEC tournament, Tennessee looked pretty flat, but Vanderbilt just crushed them. And, you know, I think that showed at that moment that, okay, Vanderbilt's starting to hit the ball a little bit. And that's something that's been missing all year is their offensive production. If they're able to get more production out of the offense, 1 through 9 through the lineup, you know, they don't have those one or two guys that are really going to scare you, but they can be productive 1 through 9 in terms of singles, doubles, getting something going, big innings. And if they're able to do that and get the kind of pitching that they've gotten at times, especially at home this season, they could be dangerous. They have 4 legitimate starting pitchers. And when you get into a regional setting, that's pretty good. For the opposite of what we were saying about Tennessee, they've got guys who can start a game and go 6-7 innings, which helps out a shaky bullpen. And I think Vanderbilt's going to need guys that they're starters to do that. But they're also going to just need to be able to score more runs. And, I don't know how you can rely on them to be good on the road because they haven't really been all season. The pitching has been terrible on the road for a lot of the SEC season. That's going to have to be better. If they start games out down 5-6 runs in the first couple of innings, they're not going to be able to come back from that.
No, I'm with you. It is interesting because I mean they are set up to for this format it works out well, and obviously they're dangerous. Clemson can't be thrilled to see them, but I worry about when they do get to those high leverage situations too, late innings. I mean that's where they don't have like what Tennessee has, for example, right? I mean they just don't have guys. They don't have enough guys, I don't think, that have demonstrated the ability to get big outs in those situations. But I think
they should have those guys, Joe. That's the thing.
True. No, you're right. Like, yeah.
You look at what they have, and there is a lot of talent there. And it's kind of been that way all season with Vanderbilt, where you look at what they have, and you're like, God, they should be better than they are. You know, the pitching numbers should be better than they are. The hitting should come around a little more. And I do think there's something to the idea of, if an underachieving team starts playing its best at the right time, they can be scary this time of year. And we've seen it before with teams like Ole Miss a couple of years ago and some others who've made these runs. I wouldn't bet on it happening for Vanderbilt, but they are the kind of team that I think profiles as somebody who could be scary this time of year if they start just all of a sudden figuring it out.
So Tennessee's number one overall seed, which of course has not been good to be the number one overall seed. I was talking about this earlier though, Gentry. Like it feels way different to me than 2 years ago when, first of all, they were clearly the best team, clearly the favorite, and they appeared to have everything, and we know what happened. They don't get to Omaha. Is it as simple as if you don't win the national championship now, it's a failure? I mean, how do you define success in this tournament for Tennessee?
It's interesting because when we talk about this topic for Tennessee, it's hard to just talk about it in the context of one sport because it feels a little like basketball, doesn't it? Where you're like, okay, well, what is success going to look like for Rick Barnes in this tournament as somebody who hasn't had a lot of success? Is an Elite Eight good enough? You know, so we have that discussion. Baseball is somewhat similar in the fact that they really haven't done very well in Omaha once they get there. So I think the answer to that question would have to involve making more of a run in Omaha than they've made. But I mean, you're setting yourself up with high expectations when you enter a tournament as the number one overall seed, second time in 3 years. If you're the number one overall seed and you don't win the whole thing, yeah, I think people are going to be disappointed by that.
Yeah, it's a really, really interesting part of this too. On the Titans front, Gentry, as you look at the moves they've made this offseason, we were going through this earlier in the show. It's been very busy. What do you think Rand Carthon proved this offseason? What do you think are some questions that he answered just about his term as general manager here and just the state of transition that this Titans franchise is in with him at the helm?
Ooh, coming off the top rope with that one there, Robbie.
Getting deep.
I think it's a good offseason. I think you go into this offseason with a lot of cap space, a lot of resources, a lot of holes to fill. I think we knew we were going to come out of this saying, God, they got a lot better. You know, they got a lot of good players. And I think this team by all accounts, should be better for a lot of reasons. To me, what I've probably liked best about this whole offseason has been, after the draft, I asked Rancarthen what he was most excited about after all this. He could have said anything. He could have said any of the free agents. He could have said the draft class. But he said the coaching staff, and I actually agree with him on that. I think that's one of the areas that we're going to see a pretty significant impact, especially on the offensive line, with what they were able to do there. So there's going to be optimism just because they got a lot of new faces, a lot of new players. But we'll see, obviously what happens when the games. I do think the Titans are going to be better this year, and if that's the measuring stick for, a GM in his second year, if they got much better from the first to second year, I do think that's probably going to be the case.
So I guess we're out there. What, we're out there again tomorrow, I believe. I got to get used to the 4-day week here. Anything last week that jumped out at you, Gentry, from the field where you were like, oh wow, that's really interesting. And obviously, we all have practice takes that turn into nothing, like Treylon Burks dominating in camp last year. But anything that really stuck out to you?
I like the receivers. I don't think that's a big shock. It helped that they were all there, too. I mean, like some of the other positions, some of the top guys weren't there. But I think, and I wrote afterwards, I think just seeing the receivers and just a little bit of what they were doing offensively, this is going to be a lot different from what the Titans were used to. I don't think that's any real news to people from the standpoint of just how different this offense is going to be. But to me, with what they're about to do, and some of the comments from Callahan in terms of how excited he was about the two running backs and how he can use them in different ways, it just kind of solidified for me how different this is going to be, and how a player like, say, Derrick Henry, I don't really think had a place in what they're going to be doing.
Well, Gentry, great stuff as always, man. Really appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning, and we will talk to you soon.
Yep, you bet. Take care, guys.
Gentry Estes from the Tennessee and our guest on Robbie and Rexwell. We'll react to what Gentry had to say. More of your thoughts on Tennessee and Vanderbilt coming up in their regionals this weekend as well. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, David James here with you on this Tuesday morning. We're taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Thanks to Gentry Estes for being with us in the last segment. So, Joe, Tennessee wins the SEC regular season title, now wins the SEC tournament title in the baseball part of this. They are the number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament, hosting their regional coming up starting this weekend. What do you make of this Tennessee team, what they've done now in the SEC tournament in addition to the regular season, and how well-positioned they are in terms of how their roster's built, the way they've played, et cetera, to win a national title heading into postseason play now with the NCAA tournament?
I look at a team that has, like Gentry said, that has one starter, and I have my doubts, but I kind of like that too for them. Like I just think psychologically it is so different for them to be the one seed. Some people are picking them. I know. Like Mitch Sherman at the athletic, he and Mitch Light did their like kind of picks today and picked Tennessee. Some people pick them, but they aren't the unanimous obvious choice. Also, they were the unanimous obvious choice because 2 years ago they had three fantastic starters and a bullpen and a lineup and everything that you would need. And of course, they also were very. And I think it may have hurt them in the end. They were very aggressive, emotional, trash-talking bunch, right?
They were.
And people hated them, and they enjoyed it, and double middles up to you as I drowned the bases. That was quite a squad.
Still one of the great images of all time.
I have my doubts just because I just think, man, if you have to do that many bullpen games, even if you have a really good bullpen, and they do, they got a bunch of good arms. I would feel a lot better if you had at least one more innings eating starter in the mix, but I think I'm really impressed with, look, they went to Hoover and you could easily make the case, get the heck out of there and go rest up, right? Then Vanderbilt thumps them.
Yep.
And I think that the competitive I mean, I think the competitiveness of this team took over too. You have to look at that too. Like, they're like, screw this. I'm not going to just go home. Let's win this thing. And they did, and they got Vanderbilt back, and I you got to be impressed with that. So I do think if they end up not making it to Omaha, or they end up not making it the final series, winning it all, it's probably going to be because you just leaned a little bit too heavily on a guy who can give you an inning and a guy who can give you two innings, and I think that'll probably be their undoing. But if the main hitters in that fearsome lineup, starting with Christian Moore, you know, Blake Burke, top of that lineup, if they get going here, then that could be plenty for them. I mean, yep. I think it's – look, there aren't that many teams. That's one thing to keep in mind. There aren't that many teams out there that have, you know, rotations like the Vols did 2 years ago, or like Vanderbilt has had some of these years. Like, there's a lot of teams that are going to play bullpen games. And you would rather have their lineup than just about anybody else's.
What did you think of the kind of the basketball comparison that Gentry made in the last segment of kind of judging postseason success? Do you think Tennessee baseball has kind of reached a similar point where Rick Barnes and the basketball team were of like, okay, a lot of really good stuff in the regular season. How do you define what success looks like once the tournament comes around?
It's an interesting point. And I get that there is some comparison there. The big difference, of course, is just like the Rick Barnes history part of it. And I mean, look, at this point, I don't think it's fair, you know, I don't think it's fair at all to like view Vitello as some, you know, some guy who struggles in the postseason. Yes, 2 years ago, that was obviously a huge disappointment. But the year before that, they got to Omaha ahead of schedule. And then last year, they win one or two games. They won two games, right, in Omaha last year?
I believe.
I mean, they beat Quinn Matthews. They came back on him, who was an incredible, one of the best pitchers in game last year. I mean, they, you know, they couldn't deal with Skeens and LSU, right? I mean, that's
– join the club.
Right, exactly. So like, I think – I mean, look, if you want to go to make the comparison, Vanderbilt and Tennessee, obviously Vanderbilt had that best team in the country in 07. They don't get – they lose to Michigan in a shocker. David Price with a bullpen. And they had won a lot of years where it's like, great program, great in the SEC, ranked, great players, but they're not – they can't get it done when it matters most. And then they did. I mean, it took a long time, you know. So I think that it's definitely premature to look at any sort of issues. I mean, for the most part, it's been an incredible tenure here for Vitello. What is success, though? Is it just either they win it all or it's disappointing, or like if they get to the final series, is that, you know, I mean, how do you define that?
Well, I do think like the number one overall seed makes it interesting because, I mean, by that metric, it would tell you, well, they're the best team. They should be the one that wins, right? But like I'm totally with you from the standpoint of this is not the same situation that it was a couple of years ago, where they were just clearly the best team. Like, it's not like Tennessee is just head and shoulders above everybody.
They had no weaknesses
this year, right?
They had no weaknesses too.
Right. Like, it's a different situation. Now, the one thing that's also interesting about this, and look, I don't know how much stock I put into it. The numbers are what they are, so it's hard to argue with it, but like the number one overall seed has not won this tournament since when? 99? Is that the last
1999,
time?
1999. Miami Hurricanes.
I mean, you're talking about 25 years since the number one overall seed in the tournament.
The first year of the current format, and that's it.
Which is pretty wild to think
insane.
About. Like, the fact that nobody has done it since then is pretty crazy. Now, eventually, that's going to end. Like, there's going to be at some point here, I think, a number one overall seed that wins this tournament. Will it be this year? And if it's not, like, let's say Tennessee got to the final. Like, I would consider that a pretty successful year, right? Like, I don't know how you couldn't.
Right. I mean,
obviously,
agree.
The end would be disappointing.
That's the thing. Then you get there, and it's like, okay, win it, you know? So, yeah, but I'm with you. And, by the way, it was one. They got the one win against Stanford. They lost twice to LSU last year. But, you know, you got the win, so you can't do you can't win in Omaha, you know. Can't do that anymore. The thing about Wake Forest is, and I'm with Gentry too, and I think it's a tougher draw than you could have had here as a number one overall seed. Wake Forest, I believe, are Mitch Light. We're gonna have to have Mitch Light in studio here at some point. But I believe he wrote a story recently. They have 4 or 5 possible like first round picks. So they haven't had the kind of team success. Like they haven't been as dominant maybe as you might expect with that kind of talent, but they've got that kind of talent. And
I could see Chase Burns.
Well, Chase Burns, I mean, and he's so emotional. Think about him last year in Hattiesburg. And as it turns out, last year, I mean, look, he got demoted from the starting rotation, became this hugely important piece out of the bullpen, and a guy who not only could come in and just get you 3 strikeouts, a bases loaded, no outs, 8th inning, but also could give you 4 or 5 innings,
yep,
and did that. He left, you know, and so yeah, that's potential real drama ahead, and a very tough draw potentially if that's what it is. If it's Wake in Tennessee,
do you think Tennessee fans are suffering from like what I called the bowling ball syndrome back in the day, where bringing the ball back and then you just drop it on your foot and it hurts real bad and you're like, you're waiting for that to drop here? Went through that a lot with Tennessee football. Like, do you feel like Tennessee fans are like, all right, in what painful way is this season going to come to an end for this baseball team?
Yeah, I think there is some of that. Well, and there's some of that with the Vols fan who's also like a Titans fan. Yeah. They'll point to the Tannehill game against the Bengals, yep, right? Or both Titans and Preds. You can stretch back to intent to blow. You know, this whole like our teams,
man,
just don't finish it.
They've been through a lot of stuff when you really think about it. If you're like a Vols, Titans, Preds fan, you've been through some things.
If you're a Vols and Nashville Pro Sports fan, yeah. Because again, like the last team that actually came through and won a championship was Corbin's guys. Yep. And even they, you know, they blow out Mississippi State in the first game of the final series 3 years ago. And then they, you know, at that point, you're like, well, here they go. They're about to win 2 out of 3, and then they lose that. So there's been a lot of course, that's the thing. I guess if you're a Vols fan, you enjoyed the hell out of that. So at least, you know, you're going to be one or the other on that. But in general, yeah, it's time for a team in this state to finish the deal, man.
I agree.
Win the freaking thing.
Yeah.
Tennessee baseball, great chance to do it. And Vanderbilt baseball, I do not be shocked if they are in Omaha. Well, I think they could do just like Tennessee last year and go on the road in a super and end up in Omaha.
Well, we're going to get into them coming up next. We'll take your thoughts on Tennessee's chances heading into the regionals this weekend, and also Vanderbilt, who looks like they may have figured some things out. We'll get into the Vanderbilt side of things coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. We are taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, which are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Broadcasting live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Tune in to 94.9 The Fan today as the Nashville Sounds take on the Memphis Redbirds on the road. Pre-game at 6:50, first pitch at 7:05. Coverage also available on the 94.9 The Fan app and at 94.9thefan.com. Sounds baseball presented by Twin Peaks, Family Leisure, and Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. Taking your thoughts, Bradford on the text line, talking about the Vols. I'm used to it. They end up being good, if not great. Nothing different than it's always been for the last few years. Tyler on the text line says, I'm a Vols, Titans, Preds, Arsenal, and Ferrari fan. Those last two lost me.
Mm. But okay, yeah.
Everyone that's gifted at blowing it, Tyler says.
Interesting.
Does Ferrari blow it?
Do you go to Fleet Street to watch Arsenal, Tyler? Let us know. I think that's the Arsenal spot. And Ferrari blows it?
I guess.
Is that right?
I guess so.
I'd like a Ferrari.
I would too.
Does that matter? Same.
Joe, on the Vanderbilt side of things, obviously their run comes to an end against Tennessee, but a pretty good run by Vanderbilt in the SEC tournament, going from a series against Kentucky where they got beat on that Saturday, and, you know, Kentucky went crazy on the field and I guess had a fireworks show. And Tim Corbin apparently took very strong mental note of everything that was going on around Kentucky after they won that game. He's talked about it many times
in
the aftermath.
Yeah, I need video of this celebration. It sounded
I need it too.
Off the chain.
It did sound off the chain. So Tim Corbin and his group followed that up with a Sunday win against Kentucky to close out that series and then put together a nice run in the SEC tournament. It feels like
they're starting to figure some things out, especially from a lineup perspective, hitting the baseball. So what do you make of Vanderbilt, how they're playing heading into the tournament, and their draw? They're the number two seed in the Clemson regional, and they'll take on Coastal Carolina for their first game.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, again, I like that they have starters that, you know, you can go into these games with and say, hey, like, this guy can give you six, seven innings, keep the other team to two, three runs, and give you a real chance to win. That's a great thing to have. And the pitching depth, and like Gentry said, like, they got four people that you feel pretty good about, you know, starting. Obviously, J.D. Thompson has really come on here and has gotten them some huge performances that really are why they are in this tournament for an 18th straight time. Really, if you want to look at those, the win over Tennessee and the win over Kentucky to salvage a win from both of those series, I mean, I don't think they're here if they don't get those. So I really like that. And obviously they got some – I mean, Holcomb, the freshman, there's a guy who fits the profile of a guy with some serious pop. And I think down the road he's going to be a really good player. But he's one of those guys who is showing some signs of life. You know, and Alan Espinal has really done a lot to, like, carry this offense. You know, it's just, are they going to get enough of that? Because some of these games turn into, you know, no matter if you like your starter, some of these games turn into 10-8 games. Can you hang in with that? And I do, you know, they don't have, there's where there's such a contrast to Tennessee. Tennessee has a bunch of guys that you feel good about coming in a big situation late in the game and getting you an out.
Yeah.
And Vanderbilt, their quality and reliability and consistency is concentrated in the starting pitching. You know, they need some arms to really come through. Now, I mentioned Ethan McIlvain, who pitched a really good inning against Tennessee, got in a jam, got out of it. I thought he struck out Blake Burke, and he got kind of squeezed by the ump, and he hung in there, and then they got him out of there. He's been hurt. He's had a back thing this year. There's a guy who maybe at some point gives you a key couple innings, you know, to help you win a game.
We knew somebody, and I kind of thought it maybe is a three seed, but it ends up being a two. Somebody was going to look at their bracket in the regional and say, oh, good, Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
Turns out it's Clemson. So Clemson, I think, is the number six overall national seed. They're the number one seed, obviously, in the Clemson regional. And they look around and they get Tim Corbin and Vanderbilt as their number two. I imagine that's a nice consolation prize that they're feeling great about today. I'm sure they're loving it.
No, I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of excitement there. Yeah, and someone was going to get them. You know, Vanderbilt going into the SEC tournament was probably going to be a three. And, yep, of course, they bump up, get to be a two. But either way, whether they're two or three,
playing the same team,
they were. Yeah, they could have been there and been a problem. So someone was going to get them. And now, of course, you have the retrospectives thinking back on Corbin's time at Clemson.
Yeah.
You know, before he took this job long ago.
Long ago. I'm really interested to see because there's been so much talk about them this year. Obviously, they've underachieved. It's fair to say they've underachieved. There's been talk about, all right, like, is Corbin losing his fastball a little bit? There's talk about that from the Vanderbilt fan base. There's obviously the other part of this, which I think makes it harder for Vanderbilt fans, which is the Tennessee part and the success that they've had. But, like, all that really matters when you're Vanderbilt baseball and you've gone through kind of the building process of this program that they've gone through, really what matters is now, right? Like, it's this time of year and how you perform this time of year. So if you find a way to get through this regional and get yourself into a super next week, then I'm not going to say everything about the regular season is forgotten, but you could go a long way towards reshaping how this team is viewed now based on what you do in the postseason.
Yeah, for sure. Again, Tennessee last year was in a tougher spot than Vanderbilt before they played Vanderbilt. It was a hugely disappointing regular season for Tennessee. With they're having to change the rotation. Chase Burns is getting rocked, and it's like, what's going on with him? And he gets put in the bullpen, and they're not going to make the NCAA tournament. And all of a sudden, they end up winning a road super regional, a much contested road super regional, yes, a place without an Applebee's, so it probably should have been in Knoxville, I guess. But they went down to Hattiesburg. Oh, I had a few sweet days in Hattiesburg with the Vols. That was great. And
did you go to the Applebee's?
Got the big win. Well, they didn't have one. They don't have one. We did not go to Applebee's.
What do they have there? Did they have Cracker Barrel?
We went to Mike Wilson's, something, Ben McKee. We went to a couple
Southern
places.
Miss is like a it's a decent-sized college,
yeah,
right?
They had some cool, like, place. So
they got to have something.
It has to at least have a Waffle House.
Yeah. They had like some cool restaurants that are locally owned, which is what I like anyway. So I mean, I don't know what Mike Wilson's complaining about. Well, like, he loves the riblets, I guess.
Brett Favre got a place down there? No steakhouse?
How could there not have been? But I don't remember seeing that. I mean, there's a Brett Favre steakhouse, as you know, in Green Bay.
There is.
But I did not see a Brett Favre place. I don't know.
You have to sell it?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe, man.
We better stop talking about him. He might
sell us. Volleyball.
He's just hanging out in alleys taking food from people who are trying to.
Hey, going door to door.
Yeah.
I need $5 for my daughter's volleyball facility, please.
He's out panhandling. Southern Miss had some nice places.
Do you think Brett Favre will show up in Knoxville? Do you think that he will be there for the Southern Miss Regional in Knoxville?
Well, I didn't see him last year. Was he there last year?
I don't know.
I didn't see him. I think he's kind of keeping a little low profile these days. Probably for the best. I haven't seen the documentary. Have you seen it?
No.
Yeah,
I have not.
Apparently, it's quite illuminating on old Brett from Kill, Mississippi. But anyway, I was making a point about the Vols,
I totally forgot
it.
Sorry.
But let me tell you, though, Tyler does say, let's clear this up. Tyler says, Ferrari blows it in F1 every year. They're known for having the car and driver and losing due to pit strategy.
It's good to know.
All right.
Didn't know that. Learned something new today.
That choker Ferrari.
Be better.
Good to know. And yes, I did know about Arsenal, though.
Yes.
That Arsenal is often very much disappoints its fans.
Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in, Kyle. Kyle, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, guys. Good talk to you. Well, talk about all the receiver talk. Most NFL teams are building to win their division, and we stacked up on receiver. I think our division has a below-par secondary, like the Jags and the Colts, but they have a decent pass rush. What do you think of our chances of winning division based on,
I think Kyle's call cut out there, but I got the general gist of what he was talking about there. So, I mean, obviously, the Titans have invested pretty heavily into their wide receiver core here. I mean, specifically with Ridley, they're really, in the grand scheme of things, not paying DeAndre Hopkins that much money, and they're certainly not paying Tyler Boyd that much money. But Ridley, they've invested in significantly over the offseason. So it's a much more transformed, much deeper receiver room than it was last year. First off, I think Houston's got a little bit of everything. Like, they've got a good secondary. They now have the makings of an excellent pass rush.
Right.
And then on the other side of the ball, you also have to contend with the offense and the points they can put up. So nobody's going to pick the Titans to win the division. Like, everybody's probably going to pick Houston to win the division. But from an offensive attack standpoint, a lot of that comes down to, number one, how good is Levis and how consistently can he deliver the football accurately. But I do think the Titans' wide receiving group, those three in particular, are going to have a chance to really put some strain on some defenses this year, which it's been a while since you've been able to say that about a receiving core as a whole. Now, they did have A.J. Brown and Corey Davis put up good numbers a couple years ago, but a receiving core as a whole. Maybe this will be what we thought the A.J. Brown-Julio tandem would be.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, the three guys – certainly, it's the best we've seen to have three guys like that. It is, like you said, you get Tyler Boyd cheap. Hopkins last year, I think there's probably some teams last year who regretted not going after him and paying him because of how well he played. But there are a lot of
scouts. I would
say
so. I think one of those teams also ended up winning the Super Bowl, probably.
Right. But they would have been looked
better.
Prettier doing
they
it
would've.
With him. Yeah. So, he was one of those guys. I mean, I had serious doubts about him a year ago. And he comes out and plays the way he did. But the question in terms of, that's an interesting question when you talk about matching up with the secondaries. I mean, I think the Colts are pretty solid there. But it is so much about pass rush and Euro line too, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's just – these receivers, I think, are going to win, are going to be open, are going to be able to make plays. So when you play the Texans, which that's kind of been their weakness as they've tried to address the secondary. They have. We'll see how well they have. But their pass rush is going to make their secondary a lot better. It should. And so can you, when you're matched up with them, can you give Levis time to throw? I mean, I think if you do, against any of these teams, I think he's going to be able to find success. He's going to have opportunities, with these guys. I mean, you put defenses in a bind if these guys are what you expect them to be and they're healthy and playing the way that they have played through their careers, that you are going to have real opportunity, but you can't do it if you don't have an upright quarterback.
615-737-1025, our phone number. We'll take your thoughts on the Titans, the Preds, Vanderbilt, Tennessee, any way you want to take it in our final segment. Also got some tickets to give away coming up next. We'll do that. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. I got some tickets to give away. A pair of tickets to see Hootie and the Blowfish at Bridgestone Arena on July 27th. Be caller 3, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Call the 3, we'll win a pair of tickets to Hootie and the Blowfish at Bridgestone Arena coming up on July the 27th. We are taking your thoughts anywhere you want to take them. Titans, Preds, Vols, Vandy, on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. According to Officer Watson in Clarksville, Ferrari just came in first and third this weekend. So Ferrari bucking the trend out there, losing.
Interesting.
Apparently they won. Right.
Maybe we should stop ripping Ferrari
maybe
on
so.
The show, huh? Well, does that mean that the Vols are going to get it done too? If Ferrari has turned it around?
Setting the trend.
Okay.
Jared from Spring Hill has been very consistent on his Brock Bowers takes for like 5 months. Imagine if we had Brock Bowers, could put up more points. Still mad about the J.C. Latham selection over Brock Bowers. I'm interested to see how Bowers does.
I am too. And interested to see how Latham does. And you can project both for the other side. You know, if Bowers is just a monster in the NFL too, then I think there might be a few teams that say, man, could have had him. But also, you know, are the Titans keeping Will Levis upright? Is J.C. Latham a big part of that? Is he a success at left tackle? And if you projected them without him, what would it look like?
We'll
see.
We went through the quarterbacks earlier. I mean, Brock Bowers is just lucky that one of Gardner Minshew or Aiden O'Connell is going to be one throwing them the ball in his rookie year. I'm sure that will lead to great success.
Yeah, my gosh. That's the thing. It's like not only do they have that as their QB situation, they actually have people that like should be getting – like, you're excited to see them catch passes.
You have Devontae Adams.
Right, Devontae Adams and Brock Bowers, and those are their quarterbacks.
And that's... you have those two throwing them the ball.
Yeah, that's a real shame, man.
It's a tough one.
I feel like Devontae Adams wants out of there. Does he regret it?
I mean, he basically...
It hasn't gone well.
He went on a Max Crosby podcast earlier, like a few weeks ago, and basically was like, you know, I'm not saying I regret my decision to leave, but man, Jordan Love looks pretty good in Green Bay. It was basically what it was.
Which is hilarious on a Max Crosby podcast.
It really
too,
was.
You know what I mean?
It's like, I'm not trying to offend you.
I like being your teammate, kind of, but, you know.
Have you seen Jordan Love in Green Bay?
Have you watched Jordan Love play?
I think he ended up saying, like, if there was a way to get him here, that would be great. It's like, okay. Well, could have just stayed there, but whatever.
Yeah. Jared from Spring Hill could have got a all caps left tackle in the second round. Chiefs figure it out on OL. They do. Chiefs figure it out on OL. Now, they didn't figure out in the Super Bowl that guy got Brady another ring because Patrick Mahomes had 0.3 of a second to set up and was having to make passes while upside down in that game. So they didn't figure it out to win it that year. And if they had a decent O-line, they win it. And, you know, they've made some good choices. They've drafted high in some instances over the years. You know, but ultimately, if you have Patrick Mahomes, you can figure out a lot of things that other teams can't figure out. No one else has Patrick Mahomes except for the Chiefs. I would not look at them as a model for, you know, roster decisions.
You and your
decisions.
Constant Brady assault.
Well, I'm not ripping Brady.
Got him another ring.
I mean, he was good, too.
He was 21 of 29 for 200 yards, 3 touchdowns, a quarterback rating of a 125.8.
Yeah, it's fine.
Put up 31 points.
Yeah, I mean, he was good. But Patrick Mahomes, we can all agree. Like, the best part of the Bucs team was their pass rush. Can we agree with that?
Yes.
Okay. That's all I'm saying. I mean, that was much less of a gifted ring than, like, what the Seahawks did for him.
Here we go. Let's go down the list.
Or what the Falcons did for him. Like, those were absolute. Here you go, Tom. Terrific Tom. Here.
Don't we think it kind of evened out with him, though, like in the Brady discussion?
With,
I mean,
like,
he threw for 500 yards against the Eagles and lost that one.
Yeah. That's true.
I mean, one of the two Eli Manning games he probably should have won.
That's true.
Probably evened out in the end.
That probably did. But whatever. I'll keep talking about the ones where he got gifted. I mean, seriously, the worst coaching decision of all time had to be the Seahawks one, right?
Yes.
Like,
had to be.
Like,
yes.
just don't do something where you pop the ball in the air and let them take it from you.
How often do you think?
What are you doing?
Either a member of that team or Pete Carroll himself goes back and is like, good God. How often do you think that happens?
Now, there's a lot of people that have to just be just shaking their heads. I mean, the good thing for them is most of those people got the ring when they blew out the Broncos.
Yeah.
So most of the people involved in that at least got a ring. But anybody who was only involved in that Seahawks team, my gosh.
Just terrible.
I'd like to know the list, actually, of people who were like got iced out because of that crap.
Just taking off your finger there. Yeah, that's good stuff.
I mean, Brady's sitting over there about to cry because he knows he's lost. So he's like, yes, I'm a champion again.
More shots at time.
Brady. I'm not just.
Are you going to be watching his first game that he calls in the booth? I mean, you'll probably be covering the Titans game, but I think it's in Cleveland, right?
Well, is he going to do preseason?
I don't know.
I mean, they might, right? I mean, they might. Do they do that?
I doubt
they
does.
Do that.
I don't think he does.
So they don't have like, because they obviously have like national game. They have Monday Night Football and stuff. They don't have like the actual crew doing those games. I guess it's just Monday Night Football.
I don't think there's like a, maybe there is
your
now.
Top
I don't
Fox
know.
Like the top and CBS Fox, people don't
know
do
that
it.
They do a preseason game.
I guess you're probably right. It would only be maybe Monday Night Football because they do that
right.
In the preseason.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll be very interested, and I will try to be fair. I just look to me. Greg Olsen's a high bar. I think Greg Olsen's a high bar, and I think he's really good. So,
different question. I'm going to ask you now, heading into the season. We went through earlier the worst quarterback situations in the AFC. If you missed it, check out Robbie and Rextro where you get your podcast. Which quarterback in the AFC has the most pressure on him heading into this year? Do we think?
You well,
a few different ways with it.
The most QB with the most pressure on him.
Yep.
Look, I do think that there's a fair amount on Joe Burrow. Incredible job going to the Super Bowl second year.
Can you
stay healthy? Can you stay upright? Also, you lost your OC and your confidant in Brian Callahan. I think there's a lot there. I think there's a fair amount on Tua.
It's got to be Watson, though, right? Like, Watson is probably at the top of the list.
Yeah.
Josh Allen.
Josh Allen, I think, has got some pressure on him
for
this
sure.
Year.
Now, he without Diggs, how does that look? But, yeah, Watson is – yeah, you're right. That's got to be clear number one because it really is like if it doesn't work out this year, why would we think it will?
Yeah.
Man. Real quick, Jared, Jared from Spring Hill. Chiefs went wide receiver in LT. Why can't we? Oh, yeah, Rand wants to secure his job and not take any risks. Except taking a right tackle to play left tackle. How stupid. Well, I mean, every GM wants to secure his job by – like making winning. Good choices. He actually did take some risks for sure. I mean, Snead's a risk. I think Sweat is absolutely a risk. So he took risks. I mean, the reason is that on your board, Jared, whatever team you are, sometimes you say that is the best player available. That's who we want. And so obviously for them, it was Latham over Bowers. This is not like an insanely controversial decision.
Like Bowers is the less one. Like I do think like if I'm a Titans fan this year, one guy I'm also going to be watching, in addition to, like, you know, we've talked about Alt and what he's going to do with L.A., and then, you know, Fashanu, what he's going to do.
Yeah.
But I'm watching Adunze in Chicago, too, and saying, all right, like, if Adunze turns out to be an all-pro receiver, well, he's right there for you,
yeah.
And you didn't take him.
Yeah.
Like, I'll be watching that, too.
That's fair. Yeah, no doubt. I mean, we'll see if it works out. But, like, the idea that, like, again, you're talking about, like, I'm going to do this position and this position, but you do it by the players.
Right, exactly.
At least you hope so. You hope your team does that. That's what your team should be doing.
And you're probably in trouble.
Right.
That's going to do it for us today here on the program. We'll be back 6 a.m. tomorrow. Paul Kuharsky with us tomorrow on the show. Jason Big Joe coming up next. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3, The Game.